Hello and welcome. I'm Stephen Brook and this is Media Talk. Coming up.
If you want to return £5.50 from the BBC's share of the licence fee to the public or more, then let me know and I'm sure it can be arranged.
Culture Minister Ben Bradshaw gets stuck in. He delivers a broadside aimed at the BBC and rips up the product placement rulebook, all in one speech. Also in the podcast. Andy Duncan, this is Big Brother. You have been evicted. Please leave the house immediately. The Channel 4 chief executive is going, and ITV can't seem to find one either. We look at the leadership vacuum in commercial television. Plus, there's a new editor at Heat magazine, and it's a surprising choice. Will the magazine thrive post Big Brother? And this.
I'm bored to death with fish, and I want to get back to a bit of simple peasant cooking and some red meat. And for those of you who are vegetarians, switch off, because this programme is really going to upset you.
This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Well, in the week that Gordon Brown dropped the C word for the first time, we've got a couple of cuddly characters here in the pod. Steve Busfield is The Guardian's head of media and technology and is fresh from a fortnight in Malibu. And moving aside from the presenter's chair after a sterling performance last week.
Due to public demand.
Apparently. It's John Plunkett, Media Guardian radio correspondent. How are you, JP?
Yo, Steve. Awesome.
Well, look, we'll get stuck into the changes at Channel 4 Heat and even Radio 5 Live a bit later on. But let's start by going straight to the big story, the Ben Bradshaw broadside.
And then Sir Michael Lyons comes up with his £5.50 giveaway and appears to be arguing he would rather the licence fee was smaller than the BBC share any of it to save regional news. Now, what is one to make of all of this? Is this really about the long-term interests of public service content? Or more about short-term political considerations? I would just like to point out that that £5.50 is not actually the BBC's to give away. It was agreed on top of the current licence fee income for the BBC to fund help with digital switchover. However, Michael, if you want to return £5.50 from the BBC's share of the licence fee to the public, or more, if you wish, then let me know and I'm sure it can be arranged. But none of this is a serious way or sensible way to have a debate about something as important as the future of the BBC and public service broadcasting.
Okay, let's cross live via satellite to Cambridge, where our man on the backs is Observer media editor James Robinson, one of the many delegates at the annual Royal Television Society convention. James Robinson, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, Stephen Brook.
So you attended Bradshaw's speech this week, and it seems our culture minister has stepped up his war with the BBC and torn up his predecessor Andy Burnham's policies.
Yeah, there has been a U-turn of sorts, and it's all about the rather, on the face of it, arcane issue of top slicing and what to do with spare cash that was allocated for digital switchover. It sounds like one for Anorax, but actually it is incredibly integral part of the argument over what the BBC's future should be. So basically, our new culture minister in his first set piece speech has decided to declare that top slicing, contrary to his predecessor's policy, is something that will happen. And of course, the BBC opposes that fiercely.
And he's also saying that the BBC won't be getting any larger. And then he's come out and said that the BBC Trust isn't working either.
Yeah, well, I think there's some sort of power politics at play here with the Trust in particular, because I think the Trust has been incredibly vocal, and Sir Michael Lyons, who had a fairly sort of shaky start as chairman of the Trust, has been on the airwaves for months now, saying that the top slicing can't work, it won't happen, and indeed he's hinted that he and possibly even Thompson would resign were it to be forced through. So I think there's an element of irritation at government levels.
Well, you heard him give the speech. The reports in the press make it appear that Bradshaw was very anti-BBC. Was he as anti-BBC in person as he appeared in subsequent news reports?
If I'm honest, probably not. I mean, when we saw the speech before he delivered it, it read as if it was very hard-hitting. I mean, it often does when it's in black and white. I have to say the manner in which he delivered the speech was a bit more conciliatory. I mean, he's a supporter of the BBC. It's easy to lose sight of this.
Well, it's easy to lose sight of because there seems to have been a barrage of negative comments that he's made ever since he got the job.
Well, he did start off by saying that the BBC, I think, lacked good leadership, which is obviously a reference to Mark Thompson.
Who is there and who is also chairing this convention. So they looked Thompson like they were getting on well at the bar?
No, actually. I mean, there were some private conversations I had with both of them, which a point worth making is that Bradshaw used to be a former BBC journalist, and I think he had to be dissuaded from going on the Today programme the morning after the speech to continue the argument, I think Lyons was on Radio 4 again defending the Truss record. But I mean, as I speak, Thompson is preparing to deliver an impromptu address of his own to Cambridge delegates, which will address not only some of Bradshaw's criticisms, but more pertinently, James Murdoch's criticisms that he levelled in that now infamous McTaggart speech
in
a month
Edinburgh.
Or so ago. So, you know, the argument continues.
Because at the start of this week, it looked like it was all going to be about Andy Duncan exiting Channel 4.
Mm.
Has he been cited propping up the King's College student bar?
Yeah, he has actually, yeah. I saw him last night and again this morning, looking very smart in a suit. No T-shirt, no jeans. Clearly, he feels that he can't attend impromptu job interviews looking like a Cambridge student. So he's smart, exactly.
Okay, James, thanks very much.
All right, bye.
Bye. Steve Busfield, what do you make of that? Because Bradshaw's really been reversing a lot of his predecessor's decisions, and you wrote a perceptive blog about Digital Britain rollback this week.
Well, I've been sort of thinking about the politics of it all. I mean, because some people came on the blog and said, you know, so actually what on earth is the point of caring what Ben Bradshaw thinks about the BBC, because in a year's time he's not going to be the culture minister because the Tories are going to be in charge and it'd be Jeremy Hunt's job. Who's been attacking the BBC recently? Oh, well, that would be that James Murdoch bloke. Are we in a situation that's like 1992 again with politics, where we sort of assume that the government are going to get beaten in the next election, but nobody's actually that keen on the party in opposition? Is it just possible that Bradshaw, by towing the Murdoch line on the BBC, is actually going to, you know, win round the Murdoch newspapers? Are they just going to get a little bit of, you know, leverage out of that? Is New Labour clinging on to the thought that, you know, that they might win the next election? In which case, we do have to care what Ben Bradshaw thinks about all of these things.
I think the clash between Bradshaw and Michael Lyons is fascinating to watch, because it's got personal already. And I think it's great. You've got a former government man, Lyons, who's now at the BBC, and you've got a former BBC man who's now in the government, and they're sort of at each other's throats. So I think it'd be really interesting to find out who comes on top at the end of Cambridge. Mentioned the Tories there with Jeremy Hunt, who is due to say in Cambridge plans over the licence fee are nothing short of a complete and utter shambles. And I think he is correct there, in that it's been one review and one consultation after another, after another, after another. And it seems the last thing that we need is more uncertainty. And, well, there is another review of the BBC going on now under Mark Thompson, but it just seems a permanent state of flux.
OK, look, let's leave it there. We're going to talk more about Bradshaw's other big play this week, which was ending the ban on product placement, a bit later on. Well, after months of speculation, Channel 4 chief executive Andy Duncan has finally confirmed he's off, and Channel 4 chairman Luke Johnson is also departing. So this is going to start a scramble for one of the most prestigious jobs in British broadcasting, but one that comes with a considerable set of headaches. Meanwhile, over at ITV, it's still not announced who will be its new chief executive. Steve Busfield, perhaps they're waiting for Duncan to become available.
And that's why he's wearing his suit. I like that. I like that, the idea that Andy Duncan has smartened up now that he's about to leave Channel 4.
How many stars would you give him?
What, for his time at Channel 4?
Yeah.
What are we doing? Marking out of 10?
No, stars are always out of 5.
Stars are always out of 5. I'm not sure. One?
Wow.
I'm not sure what it's for. I mean, the only thing that was truly his big idea was that, you know, they were going to do digital radio, and look what happened to that.
That was a big idea, and there was a lot of storm and light around it, and it was DOA. It never got going and turned out to be a disaster for them, didn't it?
I think as far as digital radio goes, yeah, certainly as far as talking a good game, 5 stars out of 5, but actually getting onto the field or taking a tracksuit off, a 0 out of 5, because it never happened. People always said it was overambitious. Speech radios were expensive and they wanted to have a speech radio competitor to Radio 4. Everyone was very impressed with their plans, and a few people were a bit sceptical, and those few people turned out to be right. But it didn't help, of course, that they were going to launch it straight into a recession.
Yes.
But there was delay after delay after delay, and the fact that Channel 4 insisted it was going to happen when the whole industry was saying, scratching their head and saying, well, possibly it isn't, it certainly didn't add to their credibility, and it was a lot of money went down the tubes.
And it was something he backed in particular.
It's very much a Duncan project, that's right.
Yeah. He's not the only media executive, though, Steve, to have come a cropper on digital radio, is he?
He did pitch it as his big idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to go back to John's point, it was, you know, they kept on saying, oh, well, this will happen, and this will happen, and that will happen, and then none of them did. And digital radio didn't work. So what else did he do? Well, he said, you know, we've got enormous financial problems. I'm going to find a solution to them. For quite a lot of this this year, we've assumed that, you know, that his plan was to leave after he had found one of the solutions to them. But he's found, he hasn't found any solutions. He hasn't found the advertising solution to it. He hasn't found the getting an enormous wadge of cash out of somebody's solution to it. He hasn't found a solution that involves the BBC Worldwide's money or some sort of link up. So, he has found no way out of Channel 4's problems, which he flags up more than anybody else.
Was the way out for them, John Plunkett, that they should have merged with Channel 5, which is the one that Duncan rejected, and Johnson, I think?
Yeah, well, certainly Channel 5 were keen, weren't they? But I think I forget if it was Duncan or Johnson said that it would be like mixing oil and water. They ruled that out from the off, anticipating that they get some kind of deal with Worldwide.
Or someone, or government cash, or a bit of a license fee, or anything, but never came to pass.
Also an aside that, that it's just the same old people in different jobs. I think the Channel 4, Channel 5 tie-up was first proposed by Mark Thompson.
It was his big idea.
When he was at Channel 4, it was his big idea.
Well, I mean, Duncan arrived at Channel 4 in 2003 with, the future funding of Channel 4 at stake, and indeed the Channel's very future at stake. And he leaves in 2009 with the Channel's very future at stake. But I think a bit like digital radio, he lost a bit of credibility there. And he also lost credibility when him and Luke Johnson had these apocalyptic visions of 100 million pound plus funding deficit coming out for Channel 4, which when they announced their last results, suddenly it wasn't quite so serious after all. And he said recently, as he leaves the channel, that in fact, even without any assistance at all, it can get along okay. So what happened to those visions of imminent disaster come digital switchover?
Well, I'm actually going to make a call on this. I'm going to say the glory days of Channel 4 are over, despite who they get to replace Duncan.
Now Big Brother's finished, It's all over. Actually,
because that was a crucial point in Andy Duncan's tenure, wasn't it? His response to the Big Brother racism row. Another disaster?
The memory you have of Duncan's time in charge was the response in his trademark polo shirt at the Oxford Media Convention. I think in 2007,
Really didn't show him as a strong leader.
Yeah, and Luke Johnson on today, similar response, bungling response.
Read the press release, don't ask me.
I mean, the interesting question about Johnson and Duncan is that, given that Johnson is going and there is now an advert on the Ofcom website for a new Channel 4 chairman, who is going to appoint the new chief executive? Is that going to be Johnson before he leaves, leaving a chief executive, for the next chairman who won't have had a say in it? Or will it be the next chairman who gets to choose?
Okay, well, let us know what you think. Is commercial TV in disarray? Post a comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. And if you want to take over from Andy Duncan, email luke.johnson@c4.co.uk. Okay, well, let's leave television alone for a while and look at some of the other media headlines this week. John Plunkett, we'll start with you. There's a new editor at Heat, one Sam Delaney, possibly the only writer who's worked for The Guardian who's now in charge of a celebrity magazine. He's more of a TV radio presenter than a magazine editor, John.
That's right, I wonder if it, unlikely, but I wonder if it signals a return perhaps to Heat's roots when it was started out as an entertainment magazine and when I worked for it and no one read it. So I guess I left and it became a roaring success.
Well, it's tagged as EMAP's most disastrous launch in its history, but they made a big success out of it.
I can't take the credit.
They do need some big ideas, don't they?
They do.
Because this is a magazine that more than anything owes its big success to slavishly reporting about Big Brother, and that's going to end in a year.
Yeah, certainly Big Brother has provided the majority of its cover stars, and of course Jay Goody was really off the front page during the middle of the decade. I mean, Heat was the big publishing success story the first half of the noughties. In the second half, it's been all about Grazia, and Heat's kind of lost its luster a bit.
I think the content actually has been good, has still held up, but you're definitely right, the chattering classes now talk about Grazia.
Yeah, I wonder if it's possibly, this is not since I left, this is more recently, that it's lost its edge a bit, and perhaps is... whereas before it raised an eyebrow and gently take the mic, maybe now it's less so, and it's more a place where just stars have their say, invariably kind of having putting the record straight in inverted commas after they've appeared in the tabloids the week before.
Yeah, well, perhaps Delaney coming out of left field might be the man to do that.
It's going to be fascinating to see what he does with it.
5 Live, Radio 2, Simon Mayo's making the jump to the drive time slot, isn't it, on Radio 2. Leaving a bit of a gap at 5 Live, what do you think will happen there?
5 Live, the hot tip to take over from Simon Mayo is Mark Radcliffe,
really?
As revealed by our colleague James Robertson on the Media Guardian website. That's right. So he'd be, again, like Delaney, slightly left field, and that he'd be coming from, he'll be coming from Radio 2 evening show, which he co-hosts with Stuart McConey. But Mayo used to be a music DJ who has made a fantastic career for himself at 5 Live, so there's no reason why Radcliffe can't make the same jump. I'm a big fan of Mark Radcliffe, but I personally miss the records in between the speech because I think he's got a great taste in music, and I always appreciate the ways the new artist that he guides me towards. Moving to Salford with Five Live, where it's due to go in 2011, certainly won't be an issue for Mark Radcliffe. And you know, he's quite a big name, so I think when Five Live's going to be a very different beast when it relaunches, when it repositions in 2 years' time. So I think Radcliffe would be a great signing.
Let's move on to some other stories. This week, end of the London paper, Steve Busfield.
Hooray!
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 It's always sad when a publication closes down.
Well, it is sad when a publication closes down, but not one that is, but not one that was not very good, which was disastrous for all of the paid for publications in the same area, and which, you know, which left enormous amount piles of rubbish all over London. You know, for I mean, the number of people trying to hand you bits of paper as you're walking through tube stations and bus stations. You know, over the last 5-10 years, we've sat and talked about, you know, about the troubles for newspapers and how there have been, you know, people have got out of the habit of reading newspapers. And then you get on the tube and pretty much everybody on the tube is reading a newspaper. It's just that they're all reading ones that were free. For the media business, isn't there an argument that actually if only one in four of them were reading it but they'd paid for it, that we'd all be an awful lot better off?
The hope we must cling to is that the people who used to read the London paper can't actually find someone giving out a London Light and have to go and buy one.
Plus, you know, what is going to happen to London Light? I mean, London Light cannibalised the newspaper that it came from in order to take on the London paper. If the London paper's gone, what is the point of London Light? I mean, you know, if I was Alexander Lebedev, and, you know, and it's strange to think what goes on inside his mind sometimes. We've got to heartily recommend at this point reading the New Statesman diary this week, which is written by him. But if I was him, I'd say, you know, well, let's get rid of London Light. Do they own London Light, or is London Light owned by
Lebedev? Owns the Standard, and Associated still owns London Light, but Lebedev has got leverage because he supplies the content.
Yeah,
so he could rip up that contract, and they'd have nothing to put in it.
It needs to end, surely.
All right. Well, we've got a clip now, I think, to play.
Tu comprends?
Oui, je comprends, mais je te traduis.
Alors traduis. Vu la façon dont elle l'a fait, j'ai pas très envie de goûter.
No real interest in eating it because the way I cooked it was so off-putting that she knows already it's going to taste absolutely awful.
Well, Keith Floyd has left us, and you know, you might think me coming from Australia, I've got no idea who he is, but this guy was an international phenomenon, and he even did a series in Australia, which is one of the 19 TV series that the TV chef...
Floyd on barbecues.
I think he will be much missed. I think even though he's been very quiet of late, people look back very fondly to what he did because it was genuinely different for a cookery show, John.
I think it was groundbreaking. Yeah, certainly I used to watch it as a kid, and he was always broke the fourth wall, as it were, I think, with the cameraman Keith, I think, who he always used to have lots of comedy banter with. And yeah, it was truly entertaining. I'm very sad to hear the news. There was a great moment in a not hugely entertaining documentary on Channel 4, which by coincidence went out. Well, he was waiting to watch it, wasn't he, the night he died?
Yes.
When he was interviewed by Keith Allen, and they had this long list of contemporary chefs kind of paying tribute to Keith Floyd. And Keith Allen turned to Keith Floyd and said, so, you know, Keith, what do you think of, got any words to say about them? And he said, oh, well, they're all he then clarified that, but it was a very funny TV moment.
But that was Keith Floyd down to a T, Steve Busfield.
Down to a C.
Gonzo Television, someone described it as this week, and that's what it was.
At the top of the programme, you were asking whether there would be anybody of his kind again, and I was thinking foul-mouthed, drunken chefs. I'm fairly certain there will be.
But the thing is,
now there are so many of them, and there's so much cooking on television, it's hard to look back to, you know, to when he was different. The last, I mean, you say he'll be much missed. I'm not sure. When was the last time he was actually on television regularly?
They've got a Food Repeats channel, past its sell-by date. I believe I'm here a week.
Okay. Well, look, for links on all these stories, head to mediaguardian.co.uk. Meanwhile, something else in Guardian Podland.
Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.
What's that coming over the hill? It's Football Weekly Live, a special stream show beaming from near Earth orbit into your computer at 6 o'clock this coming Sunday. That day, of course, is the Manchester Derby and the Chelsea Spurs ding-dong affair. And as such, Football Weekly will be on hand to recycle other people's opinions as our own, even faster than usual, on all the day's big talking points. We'll have, as ever, a panel of top Guardian writers on hand. We'll have views from the grounds. And we'll have Sid Lowe phoning it in from Spain. You can chip in too, using the message boards or various other methods of communication, email, Twitter, or that SMS messaging business. That's Football Weekly, this coming Sunday at 6 o'clock, live. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, the other big news for commercial television this week was Ben Bradshaw's decision to reverse the ban on product placement, which is the biggest change to advertising rules in decades. It's a massive boost for the troubled commercial broadcasters who've been struggling to cope with plunging ad revenue. Here's Tess Alps, the chief executive of Thinkbox, the marketing body for commercial TV.
There's no way that British broadcasters, production companies and advertisers would wish to associate themselves with anything crass or culturally insensitive. They're going to take this placement relaxation very cautiously. But I think what we have to do is understand what we can do to benefit production. That's the whole point of the liberalisation, is to create more money for production. So the net effect should be an improvement in production.
The big difference, I guess, is that now advertisers will be able to influence which brands appear on television rather than TV production companies and props companies, because they're going to be able to pay to get their brands to appear on screen. Do you think that British TV audiences are going to take kindly to this, given that this is such a new thing compared to America, which has a much steadier stream of such commercial messages appearing?
I think you'll find that British TV viewers are already seeing quite a lot of brands in all sorts of programming, including on the BBC, perfectly legitimately. It's obviously how it's done. So at the moment, brands are providing cars. You might see an Audi car in a quality drama on the BBC or on ITV. On the BBC, clearly they are still not going to be allowed to take money for it. But we're giving brands this exposure on television, so it's not unreasonable to expect them to pay for that privilege. Now, whether production companies choose to go with the brand that pays most is their, it's their choice. They don't have to take a brand that they're not happy with. This is absolutely optional. Nobody can force their way onto a TV screen simply by paying the most amount of money. It's still in production companies and broadcasters' hands as to how much and who and how.
So practically, do you think we're going to be seeing much of a difference? Do you think that the famous Newton and Ridley beer brand in Coronation Street's Rover's Return pub is going to suddenly be replaced by Guinness or Carling or even Foster's, dare we say it?
I think it's very possible that over time exactly those sorts of opportunities will be monetized, but that makes it all the more authentic, don't you think? It's a very strange thing having something called Newton and Ridley. It's quaint and it's lovely, but actually, viewers won't be alarmed at all by seeing the real brands that they expect to see in a British pub.
Tess Alps there. Now, while I take a sip of my delicious Cafe Nero coffee and place my Armani specs to one side, Steve Busfield, let me ask you, is that Polo Ralph Lauren you're wearing?
I love the way that Tess Alps has already ended Newton and Ridley's reign at the Rover's Return, and that, you know, and that we are immediately going to get Weatherspoons or somebody taking over there.
She was being very soothing there about these changes. Do you
absolutely,
think
absolutely. But you know, but there are, you know, is the pub in the Coronation Street a sacred cow? Clearly not to anybody in the advertising industry.
Yeah, everything's up for grabs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the product placement. I mean, where do we start? We start with it's not actually, they haven't actually changed the rules, have they? He's announced some more consultation on something that there was some consultation about not very long ago.
This is what we need.
Yeah, more consultation.
He's indicated that he will quite happily change it, and it looks like the Tories are more into changing it than Burnham was.
Yeah, so what are we going to get? We're going to get a lot of thinking about it, and then we're going to get it happening, and then we, you know, we'll either get the advertisers being incredibly soft and gentle, or we will get them saying, you know, we need to make more money, we need more traction with this, we absolutely need people stumbling out of the Weatherspoons Rover's Return and getting straight into, you know, the car that is whatever brand it is, and them sort of saying, oh, I like your new Ford, whatever. But it's not actually going to raise that much money.
No, it's not going to replace the downfall, certainly, that they've seen in ad revenue, is it?
No, and it is still essentially about advertising as, you know, as the model that pays the money for commercial television. Yeah. It's similar to the problem that the newspapers find where, you know, we've had advertising giving us all of this money and actually what is needed is new revenue streams or thinking about how we can make money in different ways. I mean, you know, if you look at the games industry, which is completely different and has, you know, found ways of monetizing money online that are completely new ways of getting it.
What I want from you, though, is an assessment as a member of the British TV viewing public. Are they going to cop, say, cans of Coke on the set of Britain's Got Talent, or which they do in America? Or is the British public going to think, well, this is just a bit of a laugh, isn't it?
Of course Simon Cowell will have a glass of Coke in front of him.
Yeah, really? But what's a reaction going to be from the public?
Well, lots of people won't care. Most people won't care.
Well, John Plunkett, what do you think? How do you think TV shows could potentially change?
Well, I've got a world exclusive here, Stephen. It's a couple of TV shows that are coming up under the new rules. We've got Castlemaine 4X Factor. Is one of the new shows. I'm gonna ride the laugh. What else? Doctor Hoover is a new, it's a new time traveling show about a housework obsessed landlord. And there's a new BBC Three comedy which is going to run and run and run. Two pints of Foster's and a packet of Monster Munch. So
marvellous. Well, look for links on all our stories. Head to guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. You can post a comment there on the blog or find us on Facebook. My thanks to Steve Busfield and John Plunkett. Media Talk was produced this week by Ian Chambers with a bit of help from Ben Green. And I'm Stephen Brooke. Thanks for listening.